On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Janice Peterson. Coming up, car manufacturing ends with the closure of South Australia's Holden plant.
What these workers are saying, they want to move into full-time jobs. They don't want part-time jobs or casual jobs or short-term. They want full-time jobs.
Also tonight, the head of the Commonwealth Bank says any possible breaches of anti-money laundering and terrorism financing laws were not deliberate.
Even in the AUSTRAC allegations as they're made, there is no suggestion of deliberate poor behaviour. There is no suggestion of deliberate malfeasance.
And we'll preview the weekend in sport.
All those stories and more coming up over the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Janice Peterson. Voluntary euthanasia laws are halfway towards becoming reality in Victoria. Legislation allowing assisted dying has passed the lower house of the state's parliament after an all-night sitting. The bill will now go to the upper house in 2 weeks and will become law if it passes that chamber. Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews says the passage of the bill is a landmark achievement.
This is extraordinary and, public life is about getting the big and important things done. And this is big and it's very, very important to a lot of Victorians.
The proposed laws would give terminally ill people with less than 12 months to live the ability to request lethal medication. The new Prime Minister of New Zealand says she'd like to visit Australia very early in her term. Jacinda Ardern has begun the job of putting together her first government after the New Zealand First Party announced yesterday they were backing her Labor Party to form government. It'll be a three-way coalition between Labor, New Zealand First and the New Zealand Greens. It comes amongst a backdrop of political bickering on the other side of the Tasman Sea about the relationship between Australia and New Zealand after earlier criticisms of the New Zealand Labor Party by Foreign Minister Julie Bishop. Ms Ardern says Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is approving of her plan to visit.
Last night I had a conversation with Prime Minister Turnbull and we spoke about our mutual interests, the strength of our relationship and my hope to travel to Australia in the near future, which he welcomed.
And Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the Federal Opposition's policy on energy endangers the Australian economy. Mr Turnbull has toured a business in the suburb of Laverton in southwestern Melbourne, referencing Australia's run of continuous monthly increases. That's the longest in 23 years. He says his energy policy released earlier this week is the rational plan the country needs. And he's again accused the Labor Party of being inappropriately driven by ideology instead of economics or engineering when it comes to energy policy.
We need to ensure we protect Australian industry, jobs in Australian industry. The biggest threat to the jobs here and in so many other industrial plants, manufacturing businesses around Australia is Labor's reckless policy on energy.
South Australian Premier Jay Weatherill says the shutdown of Holden's car assembly plant in Adelaide is another massive shock to the state's struggling economy. The plant has produced its last car and will close today with the final 955 workers leaving for the last time. Unions believe 2,500 jobs will be lost because of the closure, both within the company and in the wider auto component sector. Mr Weatherill says the state government will continue to support those put out of work as they try to find new jobs, though he says the impact on the economy, despite being massive, isn't as bad as first thought. One of the Holden workers, Andy Reid, says he and his colleagues take great pride in the job they've done.
Myself and everybody else who stayed to the last day showed just great pride and passion for the company. I don't think there'd be many other companies where the people who work for the company have just so much love and passion for a product. I mean, I drive a Commodore. Most of my mates have bought one. I bought one. Yeah, it's just been a fantastic journey. And especially just to stay to the end, it was just commitment, loyalty. Yeah, says it all. We didn't want somebody else to build that last car. I wanted to build it.
An Australian teacher has been shot dead in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. It's believed the school teacher, named by the ABC as Gabrielle Maina, was shot dead in the wealthy suburb of Curran during a botched robbery, reportedly involving assailants on motorbikes. Former US President George W. Bush has decried bullying and prejudice in a speech that appeared to be a thinly veiled critique of President Donald Trump. The 71-year-old used a rare public address to discuss nationalism, racial divisions and Russia's intervention in the 2016 election, all flashpoints of his fellow Republicans' nine-month White House tenure. Mr. Bush has also emphasised the importance of immigration and denounced white supremacy, which critics accused Trump of failing to do quickly and explicitly earlier this year.
This means that people of every race, religion, ethnicity can be fully and equally American. It means that bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed. Bullying and prejudice in our public life sets a national tone, provides permission for cruelty and bigotry, and compromises the moral education of children.
Let's take a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, a shower or two, possible storms 31, partly cloudy and 20 the top for Adelaide, a shower or two to hit Melbourne 16, possible light showers to sprinkle Hobart 18 degrees, for Canberra partly cloudy 22, partly cloudy in Wollongong 19, grey skies for Sydney 20, for Brisbane rain at times at top of 21, Cairns showers and 30, and for Darwin possible showers and storms 34. Greg, more on those stories coming up on SBS World News tonight at 6:30.
All right, thanks Janice, and a reminder that if you're not near a TV, you can live stream the bulletin on our website. Just go to sbs.com.au/news. Holden has produced its last car in Australia, with Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull acknowledging it as a sad day for the country. As unions warn, many of those losing their jobs will struggle to find new work. The closure of the car manufacturer's facility also draws the curtain on Australia's vehicle manufacturing industry, after similar shutdowns by Ford last year and Toyota earlier this month. Peggy Giacomelis reports.
Australia, what's your favourite sport?
Football.
Snag?
Pies.
Animal?
Kangaroos.
And what's your favourite car, Australia?
Holden.
Let me see, that's football, meat pies, kangaroos and Holden cars, huh?
Right.
Well, you sure sound like Australia to me.
We are.
An Australian television ad dating back to the 1970s, some would say a golden era for Holden cars. But that era has today officially come to an end. Dozens of Holden fans gathered outside the factory in Adelaide, bringing with them an array of cars from historic FJ models to the latest high-powered utes and V8 sedans. The final Commodore was checked by staff at a private ceremony inside the company's Elizabeth Assembly Operations before the remaining 955 workers left the plant for the last time. Worker Kane Butterfield says he has fond memories of his time with the company.
I started at Holden's when I was 19, back in 2000, so I've been here for 17 years now. Worked in the paint shop the whole time, thoroughly enjoyed my time here. The amount of people I've met and worked with are probably something I'll remember for the rest of my life. It's going to be an emotional day, it's not the easiest thing, but life will go on. I'm pretty positive about the future. I start a new job on Monday, so I'm probably one of the lucky ones. I hope that a bunch of guys that I worked with will have the same luck, but maybe some of them won't.
Holden began as a saddlery in 1856 before moving into manufacturing car parts in 1917. The Elizabeth plant produced its first full car in 1965, a Holden HD, and its first Commodore, a VC, in 1980. Now, as the plant closes, the company says 85% of the 738 workers who left before Friday's closure had transitioned to new jobs, study or retirement. Only 8% were still looking for work, and while no figures were available, it says had no reason to doubt that a similar result would be achieved with those who stayed to the end. But the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union believes many, especially those aged over 50, will struggle. AMWU State Secretary John Camillo says the union welcomes efforts made by Holden to assist workers, but says not all are likely to land full-time jobs.
I think Holdens have learnt lessons in regard to Mitsubishi, in regard to how they explain situation with the workers when they finish about opening a transitional centre in regard to getting career services and financial services for these people and prepare these people for after the closure of Holden's. But a lot of workers have said to me, it is good to have career counselling and so on, but what these workers are saying, they want to move into full-time jobs. They don't want part-time jobs or casual jobs or short-term. They want full-time jobs.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said it was the end of an era in South Australia. South Australian Premier Jay Weatherill says while the car industry has played an important role, the state now needs to look to the future.
You can't take out what was a very important fact of life for South Australia, that is the car industry, without supplying the answer, what does the future look like? And we know what it looks like. It's going to be our high-tech manufacturing. It's going to be our defence industries. It's going to be the health industries, food manufacturing. It's going to be our tourism sector and all of the associated jobs in those sectors.
Holden Managing Director Mark Bernard said treating workers with dignity and respect was always the company's top priority since the decision was made in 2013 to end local manufacturing. In its 70-year history of building cars in Australia, Holden has produced more than 7.6 million vehicles, including 2.3 million Commodores.
That's football, meat pies, kangaroos and Holden cars.
Football and meat pies, kangaroos and Holden cars.
And that report from Peggy Giacomellis. Still to come tonight, the head of the Commonwealth Bank says that any possible breaches of anti-money laundering and terrorism financing laws were not deliberate.
Even in the AUSTRAC allegations as they're made, there is no suggestion of deliberate poor behaviour. There is no suggestion of deliberate malfeasance. There is no suggestion of deliberate circumvention of the law, as we understand it.
More on that story a little later. 14 past six now. North Korea has written an open letter to Australia's federal parliament, urging it to distance itself from the Trump administration. The country described itself as a fully-fledged nuclear power and said any attempt by the United States to destroy it could lead to a horrible nuclear disaster. Our report tonight from Abby O'Brien.
Foreign Minister Julie Bishop is calling the letter, believed to be the first Australia has ever received from North Korea, an unprecedented act of desperation.
I see it as evidence that the collective strategy of imposing maximum diplomatic and economic pressure through sanctions on North Korea is working. And this is a response to the pressure that Australia, United States, China, Japan, South Korea and others are putting on North Korea so that it will refrain from its current conduct of provocative and threatening behaviour.
The letter opened with North Korea offering its compliments to Australia, but it swiftly launched into what Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull describes as a rant about Donald Trump. It read, if Trump thinks he would bring the DPRK, a nuclear power, to its knees through a nuclear war threat, it would be a big miscalculation. Professor Richard Bronowski is the president of the New South Wales branch of the Australian Institute of International Affairs and a former South Korean diplomat. He says the letter may be a sign North Korea is feeling the pressure of the sanctions levelled against it over its weapons program.
It's a very interesting development. What does it mean? Possibly that Kim Jong-un is looking for sympathy from the outside community or support for his perspective, his point of view about why North Korea should be able to have nuclear weapons and why there's so much pressure on them not to have them. He might be soliciting sympathy for reducing sanctions. That's another thought. But it could provide an opportunity for Australia to get a delegation that could go to Pyongyang and sit down and discuss things with the North Koreans.
The open letter was addressed to parliaments of different countries, though it's not yet known which ones. While the United States CIA Director Mike Pompeo says Pyongyang is just months away from perfecting its nuclear program.
They are closer now than they were 5 years ago, and I expect they will be closer in 5 months than they are today. From a U.S. policy perspective, we ought to behave as if we are on the cusp of them achieving that objective.
The US has been canvassing the option of a preemptive strike that could destroy North Korea's nuclear program. But Russian President Vladimir Putin says that's naive.
Talk about preventative disarming strikes, and we hear both hints and open threats. This is very dangerous, and I've told about it many times already. Who knows what and where is hidden in North Korea, and whether all of it can be destroyed with one strike? I doubt it.
Russian President Vladimir Putin ending that story by Abby O'Brien. Still to come tonight.
We campaigned hard on issues that we believe strongly on, and now we take very seriously the responsibility that we have to deliver on them.
We'll have the latest on Jacinda Ardern's deal with Winston Peters to form a government in New Zealand. Well, the chairman of the Commonwealth Bank says there will be consequences for staff found guilty of serious misconduct. Catherine Livingstone's comments to a parliamentary inquiry come as the bank faces massive fines for breaches of anti-money laundering and terrorism financing laws. Jani Blackharley reports.
The Commonwealth Bank is in hot water over allegations the bank repeatedly and systematically breached anti-money laundering and terror financing laws. AUSTRAC, Australia's financial intelligence agency, launched legal action against the bank in August. Before a parliamentary inquiry today, the bank's CEO, Ian Narev, said there was no deliberate breach of the law.
Even in the AUSTRAC allegations as they're made, there is no suggestion of deliberate poor behaviour. There is no suggestion of deliberate malfeasance. There is no suggestion of deliberate circumvention of the law, as we understand it.
AUSTRAC alleges the bank failed to report nearly 54,000 transactions of $10,000 or more in time to be properly assessed. The bank is facing fines of up to $18 million per breach, which could mean it faces the largest corporate fine in Australia's history. AUSTRAC says 1,600 of the transactions were connected to money laundering syndicates and six related to customers who were potentially involved in terrorism. But Mr. Narev says despite AUSTRAC becoming aware of the issue in 2015, some of the allegations remained unknown to the bank.
It is true that one thing that changed when AUSTRAC filed its claim is that it was made public. The other critical thing is in 500 pages of statement of claim, there was a plethora of new facts that were known to the regulator that we didn't know about.
Deputy Chair of the Standing Committee on Economics, Labor MP Matt Thistlethwaite, says the AUSTRAC allegations highlighted the need for a royal commission into the banks.
If there is a settlement, it's likely that the details of exactly what's gone on here and who was responsible will never come to light. And that's the reason why Australians want a royal commission.
Mr. Narev is due to step aside from his role at the head of the bank next year, but denies it's connected to the scandal. The allegations involve Commonwealth Bank's Intelligent Deposit Machines, or IDMs. It's alleged Commonwealth Bank failed to report cash transactions of $10,000 into their IDMs, as required by law. The Chief Executive of National Australia Bank, Andrew Thorburn, who was also testifying before the inquiry, says his bank's use of IDMs were not an issue.
And I want to assure you that NAB takes anti-money laundering obligations extremely seriously. It's a clear focus of our board, our executive team, and right through the whole bank. We're continually investing to improve detection through better systems and processes. And with regard to intelligent deposit machines, IDMs, our maximum cash deposit limit is $5,000, and AUSTRAC has advised us they have no issues with our IDM approach.
Mr. Thorburn says while customers could make a large number of deposits in one day, monitoring systems would alert the bank. He said the Commonwealth Bank scandal had increased awareness of the issue within the industry.
We're all a lot more aware of that now. So you've got a customer making multiple transactions. Now, that might be legitimate. It still triggers the report that we would look at, talk to the customer. You know, maybe we talk to AUSTRAC. You know, we're part of the Australian Financial Crimes Exchange. The banks are working together. So I think now, increasingly, you'll be able to bring the picture together because there's a lot more intensity and focus and better systems around it.
Chief Executive of the National Australia Bank, Andrew Thorburn, ending that report by Jani Blackharley. Well, Labor will form the next New Zealand government despite finishing second in last month's national elections. New Zealand First became kingmaker after the election's inconclusive result and has chosen to form government with Labor instead of the vote-leading National Party. Samantha Beniak-Brooks reports.
The Labor Party will form the next New Zealand government after striking a surprise deal with populist New Zealand First. The National Party had failed to win enough votes to govern outright, and New Zealand First, with 7% of the vote and 9 seats, had the power to choose who would govern. It has gone with second-place Labor to form a coalition government. New Zealand First leader Winston Peters waited for a televised broadcast to reveal his decision to everyone, including Labor. He says he has chosen a party he can work with.
We had a choice to make, whether it was either with National or Labor, for a modified status quo or for change. In our negotiations, both National and Labor were presented with that opportunity. Working together, cooperating together for New Zealand. That's why in the end we chose a coalition government of New Zealand First with the New Zealand Labor Party.
The Prime Minister-elect, Labor leader Jacinda Ardern, is set to become New Zealand's youngest leader since the 1800s. She says she feels deeply honoured.
I feel extraordinarily honoured and privileged to be in the position to form a government with Labor at the lead. I want to thank all those who gave Labor support throughout the election and through this period of negotiation. We campaigned hard on issues that we believe strongly on, and now we take very seriously the responsibility that we have to deliver on them.
Ms Ardern has asked Mr Peters to become Deputy Prime Minister and will now begin forming her cabinet. But she will head a minority government with a combined 55 seats to the Nationals' 56. That means she must rely on a confidence and supply deal with the Greens' 8 MPs. Ms Ardern says she feels her party can work well with Mr Peters and New Zealand First.
The vast majority of these negotiations have been about the things he wants to deliver for New Zealanders. I absolutely respect that. We've found a pathway forward to do that, and I have no doubt that we will work together in a respectful relationship and with the goal of delivering for all New Zealanders.
In Australia, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and Foreign Minister Julie Bishop have congratulated Ms Ardern on her victory. Ms Bishop has also dismissed talk on Twitter of tensions with the Prime Minister-elect, calling it rubbish. In the campaign, she accused New Zealand's Labor Party of colluding with Australia's Labor Party to produce information on Barnaby Joyce's dual New Zealand citizenship. She accused New Zealand Labor of conspiring to undermine the Turnbull government. But Ms Bishop has now told the Nine Network any issues with the party have been resolved.
The fact is Ms Ardern gave an explanation a couple of months ago about the behaviour of a New Zealand member of the Labor Party, and she said at the time that his conduct was wrong, it was unacceptable, it should never have happened and that he shouldn't have become involved. And I accepted her explanation and I agree with her absolutely.
Ms Bishop says she looks forward to working with the new government.
I congratulate Ms Ardern on her election as Prime Minister. She's the Prime Minister-designate of New Zealand. We have a very strong and deep relationship with New Zealand, and I'm looking forward to working with the new government.
Julie Bishop ending that report by Samantha Beniak-Brooks. Well, Australia goes into the third Bledisloe rugby clash in Brisbane, looking to hand New Zealand its first defeat of the rugby championship. And there's also a Sydney derby in the A-League to look forward to this weekend. John Baldock takes a look ahead.
The Wallabies have steadily improved since losing the first two games of the Bledisloe Cup to New Zealand. Although victory in Brisbane tomorrow night won't change the rugby championship table, it will show if Australia has closed the gap on the All Blacks, who have already secured the title. Australia also has the chance to avenge a heartbreaking loss in Dunedin when victory looked assured with just 3 minutes left in the match. The game will see the first ever Indigenous-themed Wallabies strip to celebrate the 14 Indigenous players that have played for Australia. One of those taking the field will be Kirtley Beale, and he's hoping the Indigenous jersey will be a source of inspiration for the next wave of stars.
It's definitely going to be having an impact on a lot of the young boys and girls out there to hopefully one day be a Wallaby. And it's something that I'm, like I said, very passionate about, and hopefully this is the start of something really important moving forward.
The big match in the A-League this weekend is the Sydney Derby, with top-of-the-table Sydney FC looking to make it 3 wins from 3 to start the season. Western Sydney Wanderers are undefeated too, with a win and a draw so far. But Sydney is in the middle of an 11-game unbeaten run stretching back to the end of last season and includes 10 wins. Despite that great form, Sky Blues midfielder Brandon O'Neill says the biggest thing in Sydney's favour on Saturday night is home advantage in what is always a keenly contested affair.
I think it's a fortress for us. We have our fans there every single week, making sure that we put in a good performance and get the win in every single game we play there. And we've proven that this season. And to have a derby at Allianz where it's a fortress for us, it's going to be good.
In the English Premier League this weekend, there's another full round of matches. SBS has live coverage of the league leaders Manchester City's home clash against Burnley. The coverage gets underway from 12:30 on Sunday morning. SBS and Viceland will also have two live basketball matches, with the Adelaide 36ers facing up to an injury-hit Sydney Kings on Saturday afternoon. Sydney Kings lost its captain Kevin Lish last week to a long-term calf injury, but have signed American import Jeremy Kendall as cover. The 29-year-old played 7 games for the Brisbane Bullets last season and has also played professionally in Morocco and Switzerland. Kings coach Andrew Gaze admits losing Lish is a blow, but says Kendall can do a job for his team.
Great talent, very good scorer, good athlete, smart individual. We saw him bit in the NBL last season with the Brisbane Bullets where he didn't hurt himself at all. I thought he performed admirably in that situation. So good thing about him is that he's here, he's available and he's ready to play.
Viceland has live coverage of that match between the Sydney Kings and Adelaide from 5:30pm on Saturday. And there's another match for basketball fans to enjoy on SBS when the title favourites Melbourne United play the New Zealand Breakers. That match coverage gets underway at 3pm on Sunday. The ongoing row in the NFL over some players refusing to stand for the American National Anthem before matches has sparked meetings between the league and club owners. President Trump has made his thoughts clear on Twitter that any player refusing to stand in protest over racial inequality should be sacked. The NFL Commissioner Roger Goodall explained to the media after 2 days of meetings that the issue is much deeper than just the national anthem observance.
The fact is that we have about a half a dozen players that are protesting. We hope and we're going to continue to work to try to put that at zero. That's what we'd like to do. But we want to make sure that we're understanding what the players are talking about, and that's complex. And our clubs have a much better understanding of that from the meetings over the last several weeks. And that's what I think is really the opportunity and what's really happening.
Also in the United States this weekend, the Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas will host round 17 of the Formula One season from 6 a.m. on Monday morning. Britain's Lewis Hamilton leads the standings from German rival Sebastian Vettel. Local motorsport fans here in Australia will have their focus on the Gold Coast for the Supercar 600 event, which runs over the entire weekend.
John Baldock reporting there. Check out the news headlines for you now. Legislation allowing assisted dying has passed the lower house of Victoria's Parliament after an all-night sitting. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the Federal Opposition's policy on energy endangers the Australian economy. The Queensland Government may not know how many of the state's new generation of trains will be ready in time for the Commonwealth Games until just before the event in April next year. And the new Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, says she'd like to visit Australia very early in her term. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Janice Peterson bringing you SBS World News across Australia. You can also live stream the bulletin on our website by going to sbs.com.au/news. You can also get our content in your Facebook news feed by liking our page, SBS World News. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow us, our Twitter handle, @SBS News. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.